If psychology and pop culture had a baby, they'd call it the Shrink Tank Podcast. Our illustrious panel of shrinks analyze and psychoanalyze what's happening in entertainment and pop culture. I'm Dave Verhagen, a psychologist, author, and bad magician. And right beside me is Rachel Kitson. She's a psychologist and a media darling. She's written the most popular articles ever on shrinktank.com. So, Rachel, anything you're working on this week?
Well, I just posted, or it was just posted, my Kanye versus Trump 2020 hypothetical election rundown on them. So check it out.
I predict that will be your highest viewed, most viewed ever.
I do too.
Yeah.
That's so great. That's
it's like going to be huge.
That's like a Sophie's choice right there, right?
I know, right?
Yeah, who would you pick? That's a big one. And also, Frank Gaskell is across from me. He's a psychologist. We call him the Psych Weasel. And he's also the author of the Max Gamer graphic novel. He's our also our resident insane person. And Frank, what are you either thrilled or upset about this week?
I'm a little upset that my daughter took my hairbrush. And I search everywhere for the hairbrush, and she managed to put it in my car. And I tried to borrow hairbrushes, and I couldn't find any, so my hair's kind of feeling weird today.
Mm-hmm. That's the reason.
Yeah, that's it.
Wow.
That's why he's feeling weird.
I'm kind of annoyed.
Of course. Ooh. And you know your life's tough when the worst thing in your life is your daughter taking your hairbrush.
As of right now.
Yeah. Right now.
I couldn't find it in my Mercedes Benz. Where's my hairbrush?
So funny.
And you just heard from Jonathan Hederle. He's a counselor, a critic, and our sarcasm all-star. Jonathan, you're following stories throughout the week, and tell us what you've learned this week about being human.
Being human. This first one was quite interesting. There is research that suggests mindfulness actually messes with your memory. So mindfulness, the ability to focus on emotions in the present moment, can actually lead to false memories being implanted in your brain. And a study looked at even just 15 minutes of mindfulness can make people less able to distinguish between words they had seen written down and those that they merely thought about in their heads.
Well, that explains your memory loss there, Dave, from all the mindfulness.
Mindful guru.
Yeah.
I do a lot of mindfulness, so that might explain. That's we're going to go with a very nice interpretation of my memory loss.
Okay.
It's all the mindfulness.
All the mindfulness.
Yeah, that'll be it.
Yeah, I'm just going to go again with my standard answer is I do not believe in research and science because I just don't buy it.
Or literacy. He doesn't believe in literacy.
I don't buy it. I just don't buy it. That's all I have to say about it.
Yeah. And you're our science expert on the panel too. So
real science.
Oh.
Not psychology.
Oh.
Science. We're talking space elevators and nanoparticles.
Oh, nerd science.
Nerd science. Rachel, do you have a different opinion about all this or do you have a thought about this mindfulness?
Well, it makes sense to me that when you're being mindful, you're very present and in the moment, and the whole goal is to be focusing on everything that's kind of happening in your environment as it happens, rather than attaching any sort of judgment or perspective on it. So it makes sense to me in a way you're kind of fighting against that urge to connect it to other things and experiences, so it might not become as ingrained, but I think it's still a healthy practice.
Yeah, because the way we remember things is if it's tied to an emotion, and mindfulness is really about being in the moment without making all these judgments and getting very emotionally kind of worked up. And it also, we make memories by associations, and when you're really just focusing on one thing, you're not having all the associations, so it makes sense. But you know what hits me about this is the beginning of the mindfulness backlash,
yep.
Right? So mindfulness is a big thing.
That.
It makes the cover of Time magazine. Mm-hmm. It's on 60 Minutes. It's a big deal. And now you're going to expect the inevitable backlash of like, oh, here's why mindfulness is going to wreck your mind and eat your brain up. So mm-hmm. I think we're going to see a few more of these articles in the weeks and months to come.
I'm surprised it's taken this long for the backlash to start.
Yeah.
So our next Being Human article talks about, is religious fundamentalism a side effect of lazy brains? So there are some insights from neuroscience that suggest that the brain tends to automatically accept rather than reject beliefs, and this is oftentimes independent of how logical they might be. Because scans show that brain activation is much greater and persisted longer during states of disbelief.
Yeah, when I first read this, in relation to religious fundamentalism, which is what it was talking about, I kind of thought, well, no duh, this black and white thinking is sort of lazy, like being one extreme or the other is easier. But the article goes on to talk about how brains generally accept beliefs because they have to work much harder to reject them as false. And the example that they give to kind of illustrate that is, as children, we are very open to believing in things like Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy, Easter Bunny. Whoa. Sorry to burst anyone's bubbles here, but we don't have the cognitive capacity to. It takes more work to challenge those beliefs than it does to kind of hold on to them and accept them as truths.
I disagree.
Go ahead. What?
I agree.
How do you feel about that, Frank?
I hold on to my belief in Santa Claus, Tooth Fairy, Easter Bunny,
and
Flying
Spaghetti
Monster.
The cognition, the higher level cognition, hasn't.
And
I have proof. I've seen it.
Jonathan, you have a thought about this?
It makes sense. It's just, it seems like it talks about how the earlier you can kind of introduce critical thinking and the ability to kind of cast out suspicion, the easier it becomes or more automated as the older you get, if you just kind of get ingrained in that lazy brain thinking mode, that, which to me, it's more obnoxious to see adults that have such rigid, fundamentalist thinking versus, I understand when a kid operates on such a black and white spectrum of beliefs and values.
So I just solved one of the world's major problems.
Oh, good.
Alzheimer's?
Old what?
Cancer?
No. No, much
white
bigger.
White privilege?
Much, 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 much bigger. And we need to just send 1 million teachers to the Middle East and talk to the ISIS people. Give them an education, and then everything will be fine.
1 million teachers.
1 million
the
teachers.
Solution.
They won't strike over that.
It's an original idea from me.
Well, no, it gets to the point of education being a cure to a lot of this stuff. You look at fundamentalist beliefs in different parts of the country. That's in more rural areas where they have less access to education. You see more skepticism in areas, college campuses, towns and cities that have more educated people.
Just don't say any of this to my four sister wives. I said that wrong, but you know what I'm saying.
And we should make a distinction between belief and fundamentalism that, sure. There's plenty of studies that say that faith and religious belief can be very beneficial and very good and has positive aspects to it. What we're really talking about is this kind of extreme side of it where it's very black and white, it's very rigid, it's very discriminatory. A lot of the research too says not only is it just lazy, but it also comes out of fear. Like mm-hmm. It's interesting, the studies that show people that tend to be more on the extremes of the spectrum, like the much more fundamentalist, you show them images of, like a pretty flower and then a scary looking bug and then a landscape and a car accident. They gravitate back to the scary sure. things because they're hypervigilant about that. Their perception of the world is that it's scary and that it's...
It is.
Well, yeah, but...
as our resident fundamentalist.
So it's not just a part of laziness or lack of education, although that's part of it. It's also, it's a worldview that the world is a scary place and that it's solved by these very, very prescribed ways of handling it.
I have solved another one of the world's great problems.
Oh, good. This is, I feel like we're sitting at the feet of the Dalai
Lama.
Solemnly. We are going to now send 1 million teachers to Mississippi. Thank you. Oh. Thank you for that.
Well, at least you didn't say West Virginia.
Yeah. So now we've lost both Mississippi and West Virginia
right.
for
yeah,
the audience.
Good job, Rachel.
Good job.
I'm from West Virginia.
Fortunately, they don't have podcasts in Mississippi, so they can't listen to us.
Yeah. Electricity, right.
So that helps. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to hit you with our trending topic. This week, it's the NFL and fantasy football. This is the Shrink Tank Podcast. We'll be right back. Here's what's going on in entertainment this week. A few good movies hit the theaters. The Martian, featuring Matt Damon. He gets stranded on Mars. Hate it when that happens. And he's joined by an all-star cast, and it's directed by Ridley Scott. It's opening October 2nd. And finally, Legend. It's a thriller starring Tom Hardy and Tom Hardy. It's based on real-life twin gangsters. That's opening also October 2nd. For more information about what's going on in the world of entertainment, check us out on shrinktank.com. Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. This is Dave Verhagen along with Rachel Kitson, Frank the Psychweasel, and Jonathan Hederle. And today our trending topic is the NFL and fantasy football. You guys have any good memories or associations with football growing up, either the NFL or your high school or college or anything like that?
Absolutely. I was obsessed with the Dallas Cowboys. Still a big fan. Got signed Super Bowls, Super Bowl football, the whole thing.
Ooh.
And I remember when they played in the evening, I would always have to take a nap in the afternoon so I could stay up and watch it. And we're not talking a nap for like a third grader. We're talking a ninth grader.
Mm.
Like a little nap.
What does that
And then
entail?
I'd usually fall asleep and I wouldn't know who had won. And my dad would always come in and say, the Cowboys lost, or they lost. I was a fan during Danny White days. So yeah, I love me some NFL.
How about you guys? Any particular memories with football growing up or NFL in particular?
I like the Seahawks because I like their symbol and I liked the Pacific West art. That's about it. That's why I was a fan.
I like the pretty Seattle. Colors.
Exactly. I like the pretty colors and I like the mascot.
I like birds.
Bird. Seabird.
Seabird. It's my spirit
all
animal.
All my friends played football and I wanted to. My mom wouldn't let me. She was like, you're too small. You're going to get hurt. So go play something where you won't get injured as much, like soccer. And so instead I play a sport without any padding and I basically got concussed and broke bones doing that because, hey, mom, they're still bigger than me. I just don't have any padding at this point.
I went to high school without a football team. I was like the biggest guy in my high school, right?
Wow.
I weighed 125 pounds, right? And that's not true, but it felt like it. But we didn't have a football team, so I didn't grow up with football. And then I went to a college that didn't exactly have a powerhouse football team either. So I didn't really have any, like, fun associations growing up with football, but it is a great sport. It's really fun to watch. But there's a ton of controversy that's hit the NFL lately. Deflategate and all the cheating stuff, the concussion controversies, and then just players behaving badly. All kinds of things going on. So here's the question. Why is all this stuff hitting right now? Why are we becoming aware of all this stuff in the league? Is it getting worse, do you think? Or is it just we're becoming aware of it and it's being talked about more?
I think it's probably better than it used to be, and we only know about it because of social media. Mm-hmm. Because the way the Raiders played back in the 70s, forget about it. And they in Philadelphia, they would throw, what was it they would throw?
Footballs?
No, not full beer cans, but they'd throw rocks and hit the players on the sidelines.
Really?
And they actually put a courthouse in the stadium. So they would just take somebody down to the basement, take them before a judge during the game, and arraign them.
No kidding.
No kidding. That was in the 90s when I was still there.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
They're not doing that now. And
I'll
say something
Cuff
nice.
Cuff them and pull them off the field.
Seattle Seahawks. The coach of the Seahawks now has a no yelling zone, no cursing from his players. He's like really going hardcore with his guys, and the players are loving it.
So is it purely just social media that we're getting this information, or is there more to it?
Well, the NFL lately has overtaken baseball as really America's national pastime. It makes the most money. It has the largest contracts for television revenue. And so and because of 16 games versus 82 games in basketball or 162 games in baseball, it's a very, narrow window that every Sunday or every Monday night it's become one of the remaining cultural events that a lot of people gather around. I mean, you think about television now, it's so marginalized, all the different platforms. But Monday night, there's only two football games on and they're not competing with time. People make that a staple. And so money-wise, absolutely. But the other is with science and the ability for athleticism and what they know about muscle growth and stuff like, they're stronger and faster now to where, to some degree, even though the game has been cleaned up, like the contact, the injury that they can sustain seems like it could be much more punishing. I mean, now you hear about just the injuries even in preseason to where they're worried even before games that count, somebody's going to be lost for the entire season.
I think also just, with some of this coming to our attention now is we almost have these longitudinal studies now of players who have played for long periods of time. They're playing longer and we're seeing some of the repercussions of all the concussions and and being trained in this really aggressive way, how that manifests outside the field.
Yeah, you make a good point, too, about advances in technology, but also what you were saying is that the scrutiny is greater because it is one of the few cultural touchstones where everybody is connected to it in real time. It's not something on your DVR. It's something that you're watching the game then, and lots of people are doing it, and they're talking about it. And so with that comes much more conversation, scrutiny. Anytime you're looking at something a lot, you're going to find all kinds of things about it.
And I think the fantasy football has phenomenon sheds light on this too, because I mean, I'm sure a lot of people pay attention to injuries and players and teams, but now I'm looking at a lot of different teams, a lot of different players, and finding out when they got injured, how, and you're just, they're more personalities. It's like their helmets are off. You can't see these guys' faces, but now they're becoming more personalities. They're being celebrated as personalities. So they're more, I feel like somebody we know.
All this sounds true, but the other part that I wonder about is it does seem like there are more NFL players getting arrested and getting charged with things. I've seen a few reports that kind of listed out the numbers, and maybe that's just something we didn't know about before.
I don't think we knew about it.
You think it was going on?
If you listen to interviews from the old football players who were playing in the 60s and 70s, especially the 70s, there was crazy stuff going on with those guys. Crazy stuff.
Well, I think our culture has this love-hate relationship with superstars in sports to where they build them up, but they also want to tear them down much more. They're no longer icons in generations past. Like when you think about Joe Namath, who was a serial womanizer. He was getting drunk the night before a game. A, that he wouldn't pass that scrutiny now, but B, he would kind of lose that iconic status that he had. So in today's culture, it's just as much about finding their fatal flaws or the things that really humanize them, even if it really brutalizes their image.
I guarantee somebody was dogfighting way before Vic did.
Yeah.
And
punching their girlfriend or their spouse.
Of course. All that stuff was going on. And now they just can't get away with it anymore. There's too much of an eyeball on all of them.
But also the money creates pressure by sponsors and television revenue that they're supporting these endeavors.
Right.
And now everything they're hearing about the NFL and the media is there's a videotape of this guy punching his girlfriend unconscious in an elevator. Or this guy is, helped organize, dogfighting, circuits. So it's just as much pressure from some of the financial backers of the league.
How much do you think Dallas Cowboys are worth as of this week?
$4 billion.
4.4.
Yep. I saw that it's the...
Oh, no, I'm sorry, 4.2.
It's the best rated, or it's the most... I don't want to say expensive, valued. There you go. Most valued franchise.
The Panthers are worth over $1 billion. Yeah. They're one of the top teams in terms of merchandising.
Yeah.
Which
so
I did not know.
You're talking about $1 billion, $2 billion, $3 billion, and $4 billion per
That's
team.
Crazy money.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And what you're saying, Jonathan, too, is interesting, is that, we're looking at these people like Kardashians now, in a sense. You didn't use that word, but it's kind of like Tom Brady is run through the same filter of, he's sure. A pop culture figure that we're going to elevate, but only to kind of pick apart and look for, oh, he's cheating now. And he's, we have a different mindset about people in the public eye now that they're alternately, it's kind of the People Magazine cycle. It's the, oh, look, here's their wedding and look at all the beautiful wedding pictures. And now look at the pictures of the kids. And now here's their divorce. And it's kind of, it's a predictable cycle that we follow with celebrities now.
Yeah, it's widening the awareness of them too. I mean, just like you're saying, people who, when Reggie Bush was dating Kim Kardashian, I mean, people who knew nothing about football suddenly knew who Reggie Bush was, and vice versa. I think, football players or football fans may have become more aware of the players' personal lives. But I think the money aspect too, and all the money and the sponsors and everything involved, I mean, that creates more accountability too. Like, when someone does something, it's like, well, what are you going to do about this? This person is reflecting on you negatively.
I tell you, the time I spent in the NFL, those were probably 6 of the toughest years of my life.
Oh, yeah, man. You got beat up pretty good.
Yeah, it was hard.
Waterboy ain't easy.
It ain't easy. All right, let's pivot a little bit and talk about the fantasy football stuff. And are you guys in fantasy football this year?
Oh, yes.
Well, okay. Yes, so I am not. So just
this will be the last year of your life that you're never not in it.
I like that kind of stuff. Like, I like data and information and predicting and all that kind of stuff. So this is right up my alley. So tell me how you got into it, why you're into it.
Well, I swore I never would do it because
man of his word.
Yeah. It sounds really stupid to me and I don't know enough about it. And then I got dragged into this league by our sound engineer here today. And his team's name is Alfred Sex Cave. And I'm Thanks Frank, the fairy that. Princess. And I had a really good first round, but there's a draft. It was exciting. People are like trash talking. And you get to check on your app, like, how's your team? Trade your players. It's amazing. I love it.
Fantasy football is a great way to be competitive and talk trash, where it's benign stakes. There's absolutely nothing at stake. It's free. I mean, people some pools can put together
just
a certain
pride.
Type of prize, but it really is. It's about pride and with friends and coworkers. It's giving you one other thing to, like, tease one another and get on each other's nerves throughout the season.
The coolest thing about this league is that the winner of our league gets to give the loser of the league a tattoo of the winner's choice.
That's not true.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Rachel, do you play?
No.
In fantasy football?
I don't.
Any interest in it?
I watch the TV show The League.
That's better than
it's
me.
It's about my closest.
Can we talk you into it for next year?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so I will be a newbie and so will you next year.
Sounds good.
All right, we'll do it. So why now the surge in popularity? This is not something that 5 years ago was nearly this popular. Maybe it was. It was this popular 5 years ago.
I mean, it's only growing in popularity, but it was still mainstream 5-10 mm-hmm. years ago. I remember when I was in grad school participating in it. And
Yahoo. And they had one.
Yeah, people just they get immersed in it. It's something that, again, as adults, but I have teens that are running multiple leagues, mm-hmm. you know, clients, because it's data analysis, it's predicting, it's something that's social, and it's all online, which really caters to this generation of connecting with people in front of their smartphones or their computers.
And I think it's a way of connecting that we've lost, that how we used to sit around and watch a TV show together. We don't do that anymore. And it's like what Jonathan was saying. This is something we can all sit down, watch live. Nobody record. If you watch record football, something wrong with you. And then you can talk about it around the water cooler on Monday. And not only that, like, we start talking trash Wednesday for the Thursday night game, then get all excited about what's going to happen on Sunday, and then you still can talk trash Monday night.
Mm-hmm. So it's like you have a stake in it,
and you care.
A part of it now.
Like, I never watched the Buffalo Bills until I became a part of this league, and now I've got to sit and watch TV for like 10 hours on Sunday. It's driving me crazy.
And boy, his life has gotten better, and Frank just needed an excuse to trash talk.
I'm listening to 610 Sports Radio. It's cutting into my Howard tongue.
And that's why he can't find his hairbrush.
Wow.
Nice callback.
So am I going to have to watch 10 hours of football in order?
No.
Okay, because I'm not going to do that.
No. You don't. That's just me.
Yeah, don't worry.
I'm crazy.
This is the one area in Frank's life he goes a little overboard.
One area.
Everywhere else, this is a well-balanced
moderation.
So before we wrap it up, what is you guys are hitting on this, but what's the appeal of fantasy football? Why is the appeal so widespread? They're men, women, young, old. Everybody likes to play this. Why?
It's wholesome. Apparently.
I mean, for me, when I was growing up, there were these little stands that were goalposts. And you could get and collect each of the little plastic football helmets from every team. And you put the stickers on it. And I feel sort of that same way when I'm looking at my app and looking at the players. It's like I'm collecting all my little people from the different teams. And it's fun to look at, and
I get to collect things.
It makes me feel a little bit like a kid.
I'd be curious to see the correlation between fantasy football's rise with the Madden game as it started, because I'm curious, as teenagers and as young adults, as they got into playing really sophisticated video games of footballs, and as they've gotten older, I don't have 5 hours to play Madden football, but this is a pretty low commitment way of tracking, scoring, personalizing, so you track and follow certain teams or certain players, And then it basically, this might be a sign of our generation, it breaks it down to the most simplistic terms of football. Scores, don't score. Touchdown, defense, things of that nature. So I'm just curious if that appeals to it as well.
Probably so. You guys also hit on the social aspect of it, which I guess is obvious, but maybe not so obvious, because it feels like it's a solitary activity, but it really is a very communal activity. Yeah. It's very much a group activity. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, it's our pop culture quiz. This is the Shrink Tank Podcast. For more information about what's going on in the world of entertainment, check us out on shrinktank.com. Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. I'm Dave Verhagen, along with Rachel Kitson, Frank the Psych Weasel, and Jonathan Hederle. And this weekend, The Walk, the movie with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who plays Philippe Petit, the guy who attempted to walk the tightrope between the World Trade Towers. It's coming out. It's a film directed by Robert Zemeckis. And it looks to be pretty fantastic in IMAX 3D. And in honor of that, Frank has the death-defying stunt quiz. So Frank, put us to the test.
All right. This is multiple choice. And we'll, I guess, go around the room. So we'll start with Rachel. Rachel.
Yes.
The Australian daredevil, Robbie Madison, whom we all know and love, took the term riding the waves to a whole new meaning when he started to surf the ocean with his skateboard, dirt bike, or rollerblades.
Skateboard.
That would be incorrect. The answer is dirt bike.
Okay. I saw it.
You did?
Yeah,
cool.
Pretty cool.
Okay. Number two, Evel Knievel, one of my childhood heroes, who also drank a fifth of whiskey every day and had a walking stick hollowed out to carry whiskey with him.
That's a real man.
And got a liver transplant later in life. Did his first jump to revive a car dealership. What did he jump over? A car, a person, or a box of snakes?
Knowing Evel Knievel, I will say box of snakes.
That is correct. And he crashed into the box of snakes. To the delight of the crowd.
Because there was a lot of liquor in him. Yeah.
No snakes were harmed during the making of this stunt.
Hederle, number three. If you could successfully handcuff Houdini so that he was unable to escape, how much money would he have paid you?
$1 million.
$50, $100, or $200?
Oh, thanks for the option.
Yeah.
I'm going to go $50.
$100.
$100.
Number four, Rachel. How long was the tightrope Philippe Petit walked across between the Twin Towers? And I will never, ever see that freaking movie. There's no way.
Oh, that looks awesome.
Number A, 57 feet. Number B, 200 feet. Or number C, 131 feet.
Number two. Number B.
Number C, 131 feet. Okay. So you're 0 for 2. Good job.
Sweet.
When Evel Knievel jumped and...
It's another Evel Knievel.
Yeah.
Back to me.
I think this is rigged.
When Evel Knievel jumped and cleared 13 double-tiered buses in front of a crowd of over 90,000 people, he A, crashed upon landing and broke his pelvis, B, landed the jump perfectly and rode into the crowd, or C, crashed upon landing and caught fire.
Crashed upon landing and broke his pelvis.
Very good. Very good. You know you're Evel Knievel.
Yes, I do. I had the Evel Knievel motorcycle and the little
and
thing
could
that...
turn the crank and it would take off.
And then the little thing that jumped the Snake River Canyon, too.
Yeah, yeah, I had that. I made it jump a ditch, but it could never go over the ditch.
Yeah.
It's kind of like in real life. Jean-Claude Van Damme performed one of the most epic stunts when he did the splits between two. You should know this without multiple choice.
That was between two semi-trucks.
Very good. Two moving trucks. Yep. Not two flying birds and not water skis. Number seven, Dr. Kitson.
Yes.
Of Brown University.
Mm-hmm. No pressure.
Yep. Who's not gotten one correct.
That is a look that could kill. This is what we need to...
Only a mother could love.
That's an Ivy League score.
Wayne Michaels jumped from the top of a 220-meter dam all the way to the bottom as a stunt double for... Tom Cruise, Chuck Norris, or James Bond?
Chuck Norris.
James Bond. Good job.
No idea.
Okay, three more questions. Number eight, Dave Verhagen. When Gary Connery went skydiving without a parachute, how far did he fall before crashing into a land strip of a landing strip of 18,000 cardboard boxes?
Wow.
Is it 2,400 feet, 400 feet, or falling 1,200 feet?
It was how far he fell?
Fell.
Oh, man. 400 feet is still, like, that's...
Yeah, anything over 20 feet, you're dead.
Yeah. I'm going to say 400 feet.
He fell 2,400
feet.
Whoa! He jumped and became one of those flying skydiver things.
Yeah, the flying squirrels.
Yeah. Crashed into 18,000 boxes. Number nine, Jackie Chan slid 21 stories down the face of the Willemsworth building and walked away without a scratch for his movie, Who Am I? True or False? Heatherly?
True.
And last question.
It's a true false question.
Houdini was buried alive as one of his stunts, but upon trying to escape, he panicked. He began to lose his air supply, and right before passing out, his hand broke the surface and he was pulled to safety. True or false? Or did he die, Rachel? Is that how he died?
True.
It is true. Good job. You got
one right.
She also got an extra point.
Do you know the evil
Knievel? I mean, an extra question.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The Guinness Book of World Records, Evel Knievel told him he had broken 443 bones in his lifetime, and he'd only broken 35.
So he was a good liar.
Very good liar.
Or a bad liar. All right, we're going to wrap it all up with our doctor's orders. These are things that we're personally enjoying in pop culture. Rachel, you have something for us?
Yeah, I would recommend seeing Straight Outta Compton. It's the biopic about NWA. It's a 2.5-long-hour film, but worth watching.
Frank.
I wrote to recommend Steve Silberman's book, Neurotribes, which is about the best historical perspective on autism and Asperger's.
Jonathan.
On Netflix, there is a documentary called The Wrecking Crew. It's about these session musicians that contributed to some of the greatest music of the 50s and 60s, the Beach Boys, Sonny and Cher. You should check it out.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Shrink Tank, the podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Shrink Tank Talk or like us on Facebook by searching for Shrink Tank. And of course, you can check us out on shrinktank.com where you'll find this podcast and lots of articles about all kinds of cool things in pop culture. Our engineer and audio wizard is Zach Brown. For Rachel Kitson, Jonathan Heatherly, and Frank Gaskell, I'm Dave Verhagen. Have a great week.